Welcome to episode 54 of the Fredcast for the week of January 29th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, justice in one case and not in another. Tom Bonin's leading the tour of Qatar. The director of the Tour de France wants swifter action in the Floyd Landis case. Jan Ullrich ready to submit DNA. Free bikes in Paris. And a Super Bowl ad about cycling. Then, mandatory helmet laws draw a lot of response from Fredcast listeners. And for you Scottish riders, a few upcoming rides. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike hammered, just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, providing quality products and unparalleled customer service to the cycling community for over 20 years. Every week, I'll be choosing some of Cambria's best products and placing them on a special Fred's Picks page. Check it out by going to www.thefredcast.com, clicking on the Fred's Picks link on the left-hand side of the page. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Welcome back to the Fredcast, and thanks for your patience while I dealt with a lot of hotel and internet issues this week. Now, I received a lot of feedback on the story last week about Rachel Giblin, the 15-year-old cyclist who was killed while participating in an MS-150 charity ride last summer. In that story, I mentioned that the truck driver who caused the accident would not be charged in Rachel's death. Meanwhile, in the UK, the driver who killed champion cyclist Zach Carr was convicted recently in his death and sentenced to 5 years in prison for his crime. In that case, the driver was convicted of falling asleep at the wheel after returning to the UK via a late-night flight from a holiday in Turkey. In the case, the judge put the driver in jail and banned him from driving for 7 years. The judge, Simon Barham, said he hoped that the case would serve as a warning to other drivers who were tempted to drive when they were overly tired. He said, quote, "I recognize there are people who drive when unfit to do so through lack of sleep, and I hope your case will serve as a warning to others who are tempted to drive in similar circumstances. It's particularly dangerous for those who travel home from holidays or business trips abroad during the night to get in the car and drive straight home from the airport without adequate sleep first." According to Zach Carr's father, instead of forking out £40 to stay at a hotel at the airport, the driver had cost someone their life and created an enormous hole that was impossible to fill. He said, quote, "We hope this makes people aware that getting behind the wheel when you're tired is just as dangerous as getting behind the wheel if you've been drinking alcohol." Carr's father was asked whether he had any sympathy for the driver who caused the accident, and he said, absolutely. He's got a 19-year-old daughter, and he will, of course, not be out of prison before her 21st birthday, an important event in his daughter's life. While we can never forgive Mr. Pierce, the driver, for taking Zach from us, we're not vengeful people, and hope that when all of this is over, he will be able to get his life back on track. So what's the connection between the Zach Carr case and the case of Rachel Giblin? Well, simply, these two cases are similar, yet they have very different outcomes. Now, in my opinion, while I don't know all of the particulars of the Giblin case, it seems to me that with hundreds, perhaps thousands of cyclists on the road at the time of her death, all of them participating in a group ride, the truck driver who hit her should have been even more acutely aware of the need for safe driving. There just seems to be an attitude in some places that says, hey, the death of a cyclist on the road just isn't worthy of the time of our courts. And I really hope that that's not what happened in this case. Now, there's also an attitude among some people that says, hey, if cyclists are out on the road in the first place, their mere presence on the road, no matter how safely they ride, contributes to their getting hit by cars. As was mentioned to me in an email this week from listener Anthony, saying this is like saying that a rape victim asked to be attacked merely because of the way that she dressed. Both assertions are offensive, and both assertions are patently wrong. So what are we going to do about all of this? Well, listener Steve in the UK had this to say.
I just wanted to add the text in respect to the real high-profile case of Zach Carr, who was a well-recognised and achieved athlete in the UK. A very high-profile case, and today we hear that the driver has been convicted 5 years in jail. It will actually turn out to be 2 years with good behaviour, but it just gives an idea of what's happening in the UK. There's been a massive change in the feelings towards drivers who kill cyclists, and I find it difficult to understand why in the US someone wouldn't even investigate a case where a cyclist had been killed, especially such a young cyclist. Regardless of whether they charged the person, you would think it would at least come to court and witnesses would be allowed to be heard. I hope someone champions the case. I think it needs championing, and I think for the sake of the memory of the girl who died, someone needs to push this forward.
Steve, thanks for sending in that comment. One clarification there in something that Steve said. They did indeed investigate the case against the driver in the Rachel Giblin case, but they decided not to bring it to court. And I think that Steve has a really good point. It is the kind of a thing that should go to court, and witnesses should be heard. But I think on a larger scale, it is time for somebody to champion this cause and for somebody to stand up and say it's not okay that cyclists are getting killed by motorists out there on the road. So who's going to champion that cause? Well, it's very simple. You are. You who are cyclists in the US, in the UK, around the world, it's up to all of us to stand up and say that this will not stand, that we must value everyone, whether they're in a car or they're on a bike, if they're out there on the road and they have a right to be there. If something happens, it should be investigated, it should be adjudicated, and those who are responsible should be brought to justice. I hope that all of you, in some way, will champion this cause for Rachel, for Zach, and for everyone else who has been injured or killed out there on their bicycle, out on the roads. Okay, sorry for the downer to start the show. Let's get to some racing news. In racing news this week, we have the Tour of Qatar taking place in the Middle East, and so far, this six-stage, 715-kilometer event has been all Quickstep and all Tom Bonin. With four stages completed, Bonin and his Quickstep team have a firm hold on the lead. In fact, they've won every one of the four stages so far completed, taking the team time trial in stage one, and Bonin has taken every stage victory thereafter. Now, we'll see if he can hold on to win the entire event, but he's currently holding a 27-second lead over second-place rider and fellow Quickstep teammate Steven de Jong, and a 33-second lead on third-place rider Bernhard Eisel of T-Mobile. The race ends this weekend, and I'll bring you the final results next week. Now, speaking of multi-day stage races, the Tour of Qatar is produced by the same group that produces the Tour de France. And the tour director of the Tour de France is continuing to press American authorities to speed up the process in the case of doping allegations against 2006 Tour winner Floyd Landis. According to a recent article, Tour director Christian Prudhomme was quoted as saying, quote, "The Anti-Doping Commission in the United States won't meet until the first days of March to study the Landis case. That's too much time. The situation is unbearable." Now, even though the case against Floyd Landis still has a long way to go before it's ultimately decided, the organizers of the Tour de France no longer consider him to be the winner of last year's Tour, and they're anxious to bestow the yellow jersey upon last year's second-place rider, Oscar Pereiro. Prudhomme went on to say that, quote, "The disappointment is that we're going to know who the winner of 2007 is before we get to know who won in 2006. As for the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, or USADA, the agency responsible for doping-related cases in the United States, their general counsel, Travis Tigert, said the agency requests that all doping cases be expedited as quickly as possible. Quote, "But it's ultimately up to the arbitrators, not USADA, to determine when the final hearing will be had." As you know, Floyd continues to deny the use of any banned substances and blames the test results on mistakes and missteps made by the French lab that handled his samples after his triumphant victory on stage 17 at the 2006 Tour de France. And when it comes to doping in the Tour de France, one name stands out, and that's last year's pre-race favorite Jan Ulrich. Earlier this week, there was a lot of excitement over the fact that Swiss authorities were talking about sending a sample of Jan's saliva to German prosecutors for DNA testing in the ongoing investigation into the doping allegations against the former T-Mobile rider Jan Ulrich. Now, that brouhaha has now settled down, in light of the fact that Jan has announced that he will return to Germany himself in order to provide the same prosecutors with a DNA sample. According to Ulrich's attorney, quote, "I've written to the state prosecutors on January 22nd to inform them that Herr Ulrich will come to Germany and provide a DNA sample." He later added that while a date for the procedure has not yet been set, it would be, quote, "soon." As you probably already know, Ulrich was one of the nearly 70 cyclists who were banned from the 2006 Tour de France over allegations that they may have been implicated in the Operación Puerto doping scandal from Spain. While Jan is a German citizen, he currently lives in Switzerland, hence the need for him to return to Germany to give the sample. Now, the whole reason why German prosecutors want the DNA sample in the first place is so that they can compare the sample to the samples of blood that were found in the Puerto lab in Spain. Now, I'm a little bit confused by this whole issue because, as you may recall, the Spanish authorities have frozen the evidence, not literally, but they've kept prosecutors in other countries from getting the evidence in the Puerto affair until they're done adjudicating the case against Eufemiano Fuentes and some of the other Spaniards involved in the Puerto scandal. So I'm a little bit confused about how it is that German prosecutors are proceeding, but the fact that Jan is willing to provide that DNA sample is one of the things that a lot of you listeners have talked to me about in emails, saying that if the riders want to clear their name, they should be willing to take affirmative steps like providing a DNA sample. Here's a rider wanting to clear his name, unable to find a ride on any professional team right now, feeling that if he provides his DNA sample, perhaps that will finally help clear his name. So let's hope that that happens. Anybody planning on going to Paris anytime soon? Because if you're going to Paris this summer, you might want to bring along some cycling clothes. The City of Light is about to offer 14,000 free bicycles, just like Amsterdam, Frankfurt, and other European cities, and they'll be offering them for free. The French capital City Hall announced earlier this week that it had selected an outdoor advertising firm called JC Decaux to provide free bikes throughout the city, and said that there will be about 14,100 bikes available to tourists, commuters, and just plain anyone who wants to use them, and they'll be available by this summer. The hope here is that people will use the bikes and thereby cut down on pollution. All the papers seem to be making a big deal out of the fact that the chosen company beat out a fair number of other bidders, including the U.S. media conglomerate Clear Channel Communications. For me, none of that really matters much. What matters to me is how 14,000 plus more bikes are going to be on Paris streets, ridden by apparent non-cyclists, and how they're ever going to safely navigate the crowded and frenetic thoroughfares in Paris safely. I sure hope they provide helmets with those bikes. And finally, for those of you who are American football fans, you already know that this weekend marks Super Bowl 41 as the Indianapolis Colts take on the Chicago Bears down in balmy Miami, Florida. And while most football fans usually loathe the commercials that occur during most televised games, the commercials during the Super Bowl are oftentimes more exciting and more interesting than the game itself. And just like the way in which the game is overhyped throughout the week leading up to the big game, there is a buzz created over the much-anticipated Super Bowl ad blitz. There's a lot of talk here in the United States about the new Apple ad, about various beer ads, and just a lot of speculation about what we're going to see in the advertisements during the Super Bowl. So I found it really interesting to read on the Cyclicious blog this week that the Wall Street Journal reported that a drug maker will be releasing a new ad during the fourth quarter of this weekend's game, touting their prostate drug, Flomax, which is apparently used to treat what's called benign prostatic hyperplasia, or BPH. Okay, so why am I talking about this on the Fredcast? Well, because the ad apparently features a group of supposed cyclists in cycling clothing, talking about, quote, guys having more fun and spending less time in the men's room. Obviously, there's the implication there that cycling can have a negative effect on men's prostate health. Now, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV, and I certainly don't play one on the podcast, but I did do a little bit of research on this issue and found that cycling is known to increase what's called PSA levels in men. PSA, or prostate-specific antigen, is a protein produced by the cells of the prostate gland. And the PSA test measures the level of PSA in the blood, and it can be used to detect disease, specifically diseases like prostate cancer. It's also apparently true that for some men, cycling can cause an increased incidence of what's called prostatitis, or an inflammation of the prostate gland. Very treatable, very always recoverable. What I wasn't able to find was anything specifically linking BPH, again, what the drug in the ad is specifically meant to treat, but nothing specifically linking BPH with bike riding. So I'm not entirely sure why the drug maker chose to show cyclists in its ad. But hey, it's their $2.6 million for a 30-second ad. But seriously, this probably is a good reminder that all men should be certain to choose a saddle, clothing, and riding position that's as comfortable as possible so as to avoid doing any damage to this very sensitive part of the male anatomy. While there is some debate, and you've heard it all before, about the effects of cycling on the male anatomy and on male performance, I personally would rather be safe than sorry. Enough said. And on that sensitive subject, here ends the news for this week. Now, before we move on with your audio comments about mandatory helmet laws, I received a promo from listener Glenn, who produces the ZA podcast down in Cape Town, South Africa, and he is doing an interview coming up really soon, and he'd like your input on some questions to ask. So here's Glenn, see if you can help him out.
Hi, my name is Glenn, and I'm from the beautiful city of Cape Town, South Africa, and I've got an interview which you will definitely not want to miss. It took him 2 years and 2.5 months through 34 African countries and over 36,500 kilometers, and now has the title of being the first person to circumnavigate the entire African continent by bicycle. Rian Mansa is an extraordinary South African who had a desire for an African adventure. An adventure not only to circumnavigate the continent of Africa on a bicycle, but to generate awareness of how dire the standard of living is in Africa. Come and join me, Glenn Verrin, on the ZA Show podcast, where I'll be sitting down with Rian Mansa, chatting to him about his adventure over the 2 year period, his trials and tribulations, the ups, the downs, the unpredictable landscape that awaited him in each African country, and many, many more. If you have any questions that you would want me to put forward to Rian, please get in touch with me by visiting the ZA Show website at www.thezashow.com. Leave me a voice comment or just send me an email, anything will do. This is your time to get involved and to submit your questions to Rian. The interview is going to take place on the 10th of February 2007, so get your questions in as soon as possible.
Well, how cool is it that Glenn has his own jingle? I want one of those. Hey, I think that that's a really interesting interview that he's going to be doing, and if you can help him out with any questions, please go ahead and send them along to Glenn. I'm sure he'd very much appreciate it. In last week's news, I brought you the story of the Salt Lake City mayor here in the United States state of Utah, who's interested in putting in mandatory helmet laws for all cyclists. In other words, doesn't matter how old you are, what kind of a bike you're on, how far you're going, how fast you're going, if this law would go through, you would have to be wearing a helmet every time you got on a bike. And of every story that I've done, this is the single story that has generated the most email, the most controversy, the most discussion among Fredcast listeners. So a few days ago, I asked you to send in audio comments that I could play on the show, because quite frankly, I think that an audio comment is far more interesting than me reading your emails or your blog posts. So I'd like to play for you some of those so that you can get a taste of what other people's opinions are on the subject, and so that you can hear what your fellow Fredcast listeners have to say. Oh, and by the way, bear with me here, because our listeners aren't podcasters, our listeners aren't professional broadcasters, and so they used a lot of different methods to send their audio comments in. They used the telephone and the Fredcast listener hotline, they used their own computers, and so you may hear a little bit of background noise, and you may not hear people sounding extremely polished, but that's okay. What I was looking for were their opinions, and that's definitely what you're going to get. So here we go.
I am absolutely and positively against such laws, and I have three main reasons why. Firstly, it's about freedom. I'm against laws making things mandatory for my own good. Laws should restrict people when the activity could cause harm to another person. But in the case of bicycle helmets, the cyclist is doing no harm to anyone if he chooses not to wear a helmet. It should therefore be his own choice, in my opinion. Up here in Canada, we have public health care, which is sometimes used as an argument for making things illegal. I am against this too, for the simple reason that freedom should not be based on cost. Otherwise, what is to stop the government from someday banning salt, or maybe alcohol, or making exercise mandatory? After all, this would be good for you, right? I think freedom is worth more than that, and each of us needs to stand up for it when it is threatened. And bicycle helmets are definitely not the last frontier for this sort of thing, for just recently there have been suggestions to make helmets mandatory for tobogganing. That's wearing a helmet for sledding down a hill. What's next? Helmets for the bathtub because you might slip and fall? I think people need to be responsible for their own safety and their own actions. Secondly, I'm not fully convinced that helmets are perfect for safety. I've heard research that while they are good for pure head injuries, they also add weight to the head and possibly make neck injuries worse. Plus, they can interfere with airflow and affect your hearing of the road. Also, as mentioned even on the Fredcast, some motorists give professional-looking cyclists less concern than newbie-looking cyclists. For example, there was the experiment from that guy in England when he wore a wig and motorists gave him more room. But even if helmets have no drawbacks, and I admit in most cases that's probably the case, the message of wear a helmet tends to imply that slapping a piece of plastic on your head means you're safe. And in my view, that's wrong. While helmets are one aspect of safety, safety in general is an attitude. You need to make sure you're seen by the motorist and not only watch for what is happening right now and react immediately to it, but you also have to prepare for what could happen next based on road conditions. Basically, you have to look ahead and think ahead. The best way to be safe on a bike is still just to avoid being hit in the first place. Helmets are your defense against the worst case scenario, but there's so much else you could do and work on besides for safety. I would recommend everyone read the website bicyclesafe.com, all one word. There's some really good tips there, and it changed the way I looked at biking safety and changed my bicycling behavior on the road as well. And thirdly and lastly, making bicycle helmets mandatory will just add one more roadblock for people who are thinking of getting into the sport. And I think that's completely backward, especially from a government point of view. Cycling is such an antidote to some of today's big problems. Cycling is transportation without the dependency on oil. There's no greenhouse gases. More cycling means more exercise for a North American population that's increasingly out of shape. And if anything, the government should be encouraging cycling as much as possible. And I think making helmets mandatory is somewhat discouraging it. Not only will increased cycling increase the health of the population, and in Canada's case, it may lower health costs, but the increased number of cyclists itself will increase safety in general, because studies have shown that cities with greater numbers of cyclists have fewer related accidents. So basically, I think the problem is with the cars and not the cyclists. And cyclists shouldn't have to bear the brunt of legislation for behavior that's not really their fault. Helmets are not a panacea, and no matter how concerned you are about the safety of others, it doesn't give you the right to meddle with other people's affairs or freedoms. It should be about personal choice and personal responsibility for your own safety and actions.
David, I respect your even-handedness when you report stories like this. But I really think it's glib to dismiss supporters of this law with the remark, "I don't want the government to be my nanny." The purpose of a law like this is not necessarily to protect helmet refusers from themselves. The purpose is to protect society from their head injuries. A head injury can easily make you a lifetime burden on the rest of us. If you've ever known anyone with a serious head injury, you know what I'm talking about. The costs associated with caring for someone with a head injury are enormous, and they don't end with discharge from the hospital. Given that our society is going to do everything it can to keep you alive when you crash your bike, we're entitled to require you to take steps to prevent your becoming a burden. As long as our society insists on caring for the head injured, the "I don't want the government to be my nanny" argument is not applicable. If you want to change the fundamental assumptions of our society, that's another discussion. But until you do, the "I don't want the government to be my nanny" argument is not an argument at all. It's just a slogan.
And I do believe that helmet laws are a no-brainer. Pun intended. I think anybody riding on asphalt city streets should be wearing a helmet. The risk of serious head injury is just too great. And I require my boys to wear helmets anytime they're on a bike, even if they go around the block. I myself was involved in a serious bike accident back in 1985, riding in the city of Chicago, and I got cut off by a car, and I did a face plant into the asphalt, and it was a mess. Not that a helmet would have really helped in that case, but it really made me believe that you're so vulnerable out there, and there's really no reason why you shouldn't wear a helmet, especially the way they're designed today.
I wanted to comment on your recent helmet discussion. You know, as a roadie, I wear my helmet every single time I get out on the road on my road bike. Yes, I'm embarrassed to say, if I'm just cruising around town on my mountain bike, I typically don't wear my helmet. I don't know why that is. In fact, I hadn't really even thought about it until I heard your most recent show. But I wanted to give my opinion on government regulation. As an adult, I should be able to make the decision on if I want to protect my brain or not. And if I want to go out there tooling around town without a helmet, so be it. On the other hand, I know a lot of people that never wore a motorcycle helmet and never wore a seatbelt in a car until it was required to do so by law. Maybe the best way around this is to get the government out of it. It should be up to us, responsible cyclists, to shame one another into wearing a helmet every time we go out on a bike. Yes, every time. And we have to make sure that we're setting an example for our kids. We're out there on a bike with a helmet. They're out there on a bike with a helmet. I think that's how we solve this one. We can get Big Brother out of it. Thanks for a great show, David. And remember, keep your wheels on the road. It's less painful that way.
Hi, David. My name's James, and I live in Augusta, Georgia. I think helmet laws are a good idea in theory. I think helmets are great for roadies. A guy in my ride group took a horrible spill, and his helmet certainly saved him from serious injury. For mountain bikers, well, my local bike shop had shards of a Giro helmet on display for a while. That was the only thing between one of their employees' head and a rock garden. But what about Fred's? What about everyday people? What about when I want to ride through the back of my neighborhood, just down the street, to a local coffee shop? I think helmets and the responsibility to wear them ultimately falls on each and every individual rider, and it's up to them to take their own personal responsibility in wearing a helmet.
I wear a helmet all the time. I didn't always. 5 years ago, I did not, and I still have a scar under my nose that reminds me of that period. It doesn't bother me, but just for safety issues, I think it's a good idea to wear a helmet. And the helmets have changed quite a lot over the years. Nowadays, it doesn't look so silly anymore. So I would advise everyone to wear a helmet. I don't like governments to make rules about it. I think we just should use some common sense. Well, that's it. My name is Eric from Holland. Talk to you soon.
So there you go, just a sampling of what some of your fellow Fredcast listeners have to say about mandatory helmet laws. And by the way, if you recognize that last voice, yes, that's Eric from the Wieler Journal podcast from Holland. And of course, there's a link in the show notes to his podcast. Love hearing from you, Eric. Thanks so much. So where do I come down on this? Well, you'll remember that last week I mentioned, as listener Floyd said, that I don't like the government being my nanny and telling me what I should and should not do. There's a lot of laws here in the United States, things like mandatory seatbelt use and mandatory motorcycle helmet use in some states. And it, again, to me, that just smacks of the government being my nanny. And being an American and loving our freedoms, and you know, perhaps to our detriment, that's just something that doesn't feel right to me. And sometimes I feel that the government, or at least advocates, can take these things a little bit too far. Things like banning trans fats from food in New York City and around the country. If I want my trans fats and I know what that's going to do to me, well, then too bad for me. At some point, the government, if this goes too far, could start banning Twinkies, could start banning foods that are bad for me. And I really think that that's my choice as to what I do with my body. Again, I hate to make it sound like some of the other debates that you hear in the United States, but that is something that can occur. However, having said that, I feel that of all the people who gave comments against my assertion that we should not have mandatory helmet laws, the one comment that really sticks with me is from listener Floyd, and you heard him second up in that round of recordings from the listeners. Floyd made a really good point. When it comes to brain injuries, the burden isn't necessarily on the person who didn't wear the helmet. Because if they don't wear a helmet, and if they do get a brain injury, the burden may actually be on society. And that's something that we all need to consider. Now, another thing that's also sort of swaying me toward that other side was an article that appeared earlier this week in the USA Today newspaper, and it was quoting the statistics about how fatal traffic accidents in the United States are falling dramatically, and they're crediting the mandatory seatbelt laws here in the United States to bringing those traffic fatalities down. Now, interestingly, I posted two polls on the Fredcast's website this week. The first one's on the homepage at www.thefredcast.com, and it asks a simple question. I didn't hype this. I just put it up there to see if anybody would look at it and if anybody would respond, and indeed they did. We got about 170 responses, and the question simply was, I wear a helmet, never, rarely, on some rides and on every ride. Overwhelmingly, 158 people said that they wear a helmet on every ride. 5 people said on some rides, 4 said rarely, and only 2 said never. Now, the other poll that I put up on the site, and this was something that I did hype, it's on the Fredcast forums, and there's a link in the show notes to this forum thread. The thread is called Mandatory Helmets, Yes or No. And it started off with a simple poll. Should there be mandatory helmet laws for cyclists? Now, we didn't get quite as many responses there, but 53% said yes, and 46% said no. I'd love for this conversation to continue. Please go to the Fredcast forums and interact with your fellow Fredcast listeners on this subject. Again, there's a link in the show note to the forum thread. I appreciate receiving all of your audio comments, all of your emails, and all of your responses on the Fredcast forums. This is no doubt a hot topic among cyclists, and I'm really interested to see what happens in Salt Lake City and elsewhere. My personal advice to you, law or not, wear your helmet every time you get on your bike. Whether or not that puts a burden on society if you get injured, or just because it may put a burden both financially and emotionally on your family if you get injured, please wear your helmet and be a good example for other cyclists and for our children. Well, moving along here, one of the other things that I've asked you to send me email on recently is to send me some suggestions for our upcoming rides and events list, because there are a lot of rides out there that I don't know about and that some of your fellow Fredcast listeners might not know about. And I told you that I was kind of tired of only focusing on rides here in the United States and that I wanted to get some international rides as well. Well, listener Fraser sent me a great list of rides in Scotland and the UK, and I thought I would bring them to you right now. The first ride I want to tell you about is the Edinburgh Bicycle Century, which takes place June the 2nd, 2007. According to Fraser, this is a smaller but more personal ride. He says that this is a supported ride for a small group, but that it runs through some of the most beautiful scenery in the Scottish Highlands. And again, this takes place June the 2nd, 2007, but apparently they also do some additional centuries throughout the summer, so you should go ahead and check the website. Again, links to all of these are in the show notes. The next ride he wants to tell us about is on June the 16th, and this is the Edinburgh to St. Andrews ride. This is a mass participation charity ride between the capital of Edinburgh and the home of golf, St. Andrews. He says, quote, if you like that sort of thing. It's 70 miles or so, and some of the roadies he knows ride there and back, but most folks just take the bus home. Next up, June 17th, the next day, this is the London to Brighton ride. This ride benefits the British Heart Foundation and is extremely popular. Applications are already available for this ride, and I'm told that it sells out quickly, so you should go to the website as soon as possible if you're interested in doing this ride. Again, for a great cause, and it sounds like a fun ride. Next up, July 28th through the 29th, is the Dunwich Dynamo, which, according to Fraser, sounds like a great ride. It's a very loosely organized 120-mile ride from London to the seaside at Dunwich. About 500 riders, no charities, no entry fee, but no support. But it is an overnight ride, so I think you're going to have to do a little bit of planning if this is one that you're interested in doing. Again, link in the show notes. And finally, September 16th, the Pedal for Scotland. It's an annual 50-mile or so charity ride between the two biggest cities in Scotland, Glasgow and Edinburgh. It's a big ride with over 2,000 cyclists, but according to Fraser, it has a great vibe. And this year, it's heading west to east, so hopefully everyone's going to have the prevailing wind at their backs. Thanks, Fraser, for sending along those great suggestions of some upcoming rides for those of you in the UK and in Scotland. Sounds like there's a good summer of cycling ahead of you. And for the rest of you, if you'd like to send in your suggested rides, please send those to thefredcast@gmail.com. And while we're at it, that's a great way to send any feedback about the show. Send me an email to thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can always send audio comments, as you heard today, and there's several ways to do that. Number one is to use the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. Of course, you can use the send an audio comment link, which several of you did this time, and I appreciated that. You can find that on the right-hand side of the page at our website at www.thefredcast.com. Please don't forget to visit the Fredcast forums. There is a link in the show notes. It's forums.thefredcast.com. And again, there's a lot of conversation going on over there about the mandatory helmet laws. Why don't you go over there and join in? Finally, visit our website for news and updates throughout the week at www.thefredcast.com. Before we go, I want to thank Cambria Bicycle Outfitter for sponsoring the show. Cambria has listed a new discount code for Fredcast listeners that will give you 20% off any order that you make. Just go to the website at www.thefredcast.com, click on the CBO link, and when you are done with your order and you're checking out, put in the discount code CBOFC17, that's Charlie, Bravo, Oscar, Foxtrot Charlie 17, and you'll get 20% off your order. I think that's a great deal for Fredcast listeners. Thanks to Cambria for making that offer. And finally, as we do every week, it's time for our PodSafe cycling music, which comes to us from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's song is called Carolina by Jeremy Hopkins, and I've got links in the show notes to where you can find Jeremy on the PodShow site, as well as to Jeremy's own website. Thanks for listening, thanks for staying subscribed, and thanks for being patient with all of my travails and travels. Until next week, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Why don't you just let it all go and come to Carolina? Saturday I meet never been before, and I'm must confess that I was blessed to finally run around in the spacious land of southern bells and fairy tales come true. Don't worry, I'm right on time, and God knows I'm doing just fine. Yeah, yeah, I never wanted to leave, 'cause everything I've seen here reminds me it's alright to be happy, yeah. And you can try to change my mind, but I'm staying this time. So why don't you just let it all go and come to Carolina? Saturday I made my mind up for a girl I'd never met before. So I packed my bags and don't look back. Baby, I'm home now in the gracious hands of peace on earth. 'Cause sometimes late at night I lie awake and wonder where you. Wanted to leave, 'cause everything I've seen here reminds me it's alright to be happy, yeah. And you can try to change my mind, but I'm staying this time. So why don't you just let it all go and come to Carolina? And I've been falling underneath it all. And hey, yeah, won't somebody rescue me? I never wanted to leave, 'cause everything I've seen here reminds me it's alright to be happy, yeah. You can try to change my mind, but I'm staying this time. I never wanted to leave, 'cause everything I've seen here reminds me it's alright to be happy, yeah. And you can try to change my mind, but I'm staying this time. Just let it all go. And I said, why don't you just let it all go? Can you hear me? Why don't you just let it all go and come to Carolina? Yeah, come to Carolina.